You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dave San Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Today, I chatted with PJ. He is the managing and founding partner of the VC fund Entourage. Now, I'm calling him PJ because he was kind enough to let me use that abbreviation instead of the full Belgian name, which I'm sure I would have massacred. For those of you watching or listening to the episode, I'm sure it's written down somewhere in the description. So PJ was kind enough to chat to me about his fund's approach to investing, the way he sees the responsibility of bringing up new companies and new entrepreneurs and bringing the wisdom from his past as a previous founder. And that's both of his experience in the US and Europe. He also talks to me about the philosophy of investing within Europe, whether European companies should scale to the US, and just the overall ecosystem of investing right now, the way he thinks it's going to shape up. So I hope you're looking forward to that. And now a quick message from our sponsor, Vant.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstars startups, who trust Vanta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vanta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hello, PJ, and welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Yes, it's nice to meet you too. And thank you for allowing me to call you PJ. Maybe for our audience, why don't you go ahead and say your full name? That way they know who you are.
Yeah, so my name is Pieter Jan. Pieter Jan Boten. I live and work in Belgium. Ghent, Belgium. Started my career as a consultant at Accenture, but then quickly realized, the corporate track's not for me. Joined one of the first startups in Ghent, which is called Netlog. They were like a social media platform in the early days, before Facebook came along and crushed them. But from my side, great experience there. Worked there 3 years, more on the business development and partnership side. Met Louis, my later co-founder, at In the Pocket and Showpad. And then first I started In the Pocket, which back in the day was one of the first mobile app developers in Europe. That was a service business. And then out of that, we spun out Showpad, which became... one of the category defining companies in sales enablement. So scaled the company from 0 to 100 million recurring, ran it for almost 11 years as CEO, lived and worked both in US and Europe. We raised money from Hummingbird, Don Capital, Insight Partners. Company actually got sold last year. And 2 years ago, I turned to the dark side, as some people would say, but I switched on the other side of the table and launched Entourage. And so we're on one side, we're a venture studio. We try to build one amazing business every year, and then on the other side, we're a 40 million pre-seed seed fund investing in pretty broadly. Main focus is B2B software across Europe, but we've also actually done some investments in the US, and so we're investor in companies like an Aikido, a Conveo, a Lexroom, building out a VC firm now.
You've mentioned just so many companies there, and you know, I had a look at your LinkedIn in preparation for us, and it was just such a wall of different, you know, companies. He co-founded this, he's involved in that. So you've mentioned so many now, but I think the first thing I want to talk about really is through that gaze, you know, what pulled you into becoming an entrepreneur in the first place? Because it seems something you're very passionate about, seems something you keep just kind of returning to, even if it's not just as a founder, but as an investor, it seems like a world you're very interested in. What was the initial pull?
Yeah, for me, the initial pull is, I would say, curiosity. I always like to, it's a combination of curiosity and challenging myself. I like to explore new things. I'm always triggered by new technologies or people working on something exciting. And then for myself, I'm always also like, you know, triggered by like, you know, trying to do something that not many people will do or want to do or can do. And so like, I like to challenge myself in that respect. And I also do that. Like, it's not only in business. I like to explore different sports, or I'm always like tinkering, trying things, trying to learn new things. I think life's too short to just like have a boring life. Right. So. Hmm.
And has that attitude been the same since the beginning to now? Because, you know, you've talked about leading a company that's exited. I keep seeing the 100 million ARR for Showpad. So, you know, is that kind of attitude and outlook been maintained since the beginning? Has there been maybe an evolution of it all?
I mean, of course, there's an evolution. I think in the early days, like, I remember, you know, for me, the first thing when at Accenture, when I was a consultant, I was like, man, after, you know, 1 year of doing that job, I was like, I'm never going to, you know, have the patience to run the corporate ladder. And then I joined NetLock, and then I was inspired by the founders of NetLock, where I'm like, okay, you know, these are two guys in their late 20s, early 30s, and like, they have their own company, it's growing, they're raising money, they're doing amazing things. So I'm like, okay, like, you know, if they can do it, like, you know, maybe I can do it as well. And so like, and then you start with like your first company, and you realize that a lot of the, you know, a lot of the people, like, if you show up and you come prepared and you work hard, I would say then you're already like, you know, probably halfway there, like, and, or even more like, so, and then like, it's always like, you know, pushing yourself to do better, trying to be better, trying to just learn from other people and be inspired by other people. And I think that's, you know, if you surround yourself with, you know, people who are smarter than you, harder working than you, more talented than you, I do think they actually, you know, lift you up as well. So like, for me, that's been part of like my experience of being a founder and an entrepreneur.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned there before the going to the dark side, which is funny because I've actually never heard that. And it always seems to me like such a sign of success that entrepreneurs end up moving into investing into VC, because it's like an evolution of the stance of the founder within the ecosystem, that they've gained so much knowledge and experience that they can now step forward and help other companies. So how has that changed your perspective on entrepreneurship and founders? Because I can't imagine it stayed exactly the same, that kind of going to the dark side, as you put it.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, actually, when I was a founder, I never thought of like becoming a VC. And I still probably think more of myself more as like an entrepreneur than like an investor, although like investing is a big part of what I do right now. I think it started more when I was running Showpad. Louis and myself were, you know, the last couple of years doing quite some angel investments. And for us, our goal was basically, it's a combination of pay it forward. It was more about like really supporting other entrepreneurs. And like, if you then, you know, put some money in, it gives you also skin in the game, and it's kind of like, it adds maybe another dimension, but the big focus is more just helping other founders. Mm-hmm. And I still like to start from like, you know, that lens of like, I, you know, when we invest, I also like, it's a matter of, yes, there's knowledge I can share. I still think of like VC, the primary goal is you're funding, you know, growth. And I do think that the best founders, they don't need any hand holding. And actually, I think the, you know, probably most of the really good founders will probably ignore or filter out like a lot of the advice they get. I did that myself as well, like you. But, you know, to me, it's like, it's more, I just try to create like an environment where I can have fun. I have an excuse to work with like really smart and driven people. And, you know, yes, now being a VC, it gives me that environment to like keep, you know, meeting new interesting people, keep learning about like what they're building, keep, and then, you know, being excited about what they do. And yes, maybe here and there we can, you know, at some critical moments help them or provide some advice. But I actually think of the VC part to be more like the you know, first and foremost, it's like you're supporting founders with like, you know, money and means. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, obviously, you know, whenever it's appropriate, yes, I'm happy to share my experience. But I also tell most founders that actually, if you look now how they're building, how companies are being built, in some way, my experience at Showpad has turned irrelevant in the last like couple of years. You know, like I think some of the things that are still relevant is probably more the people side, more the, you know, some of the, you know, dynamics you have when you're scaling teams, when you're going international, when you're growing super fast. You know, it's sometimes also more personal stories or more personal things that are more relevant than truly like, you know, how to run go to market. Now, actually, I think has dramatically changed over like when we scaled Showpad. So, you know, I'm not going to give any advice on that anymore. Maybe some best practices from our companies, but not the, you know, not my personal advice.
Because of AI, you mean? Is that the difference between the way you scaled to now?
Yeah, I think AI, how founders, you know, I think what is possible today, like how fast you can grow a company, how efficient you can do it, how AI can be leveraged, where also there's way new, you know, other business models, more AI enabled services or things like that coming to life. So I think the type of companies, the ambition, the speed at which they're growing, and how they're growing is completely different than a couple of years ago.
So if somebody's listening to their podcast and they're a founder and they're looking for, you know, funding and they're prepping themselves for those kinds of conversations, and I know you've just said you don't like to give too much personal advice, but I am going to ask a little bit of you here. Just, you know, is there something that they can prioritize in terms of standing out and catching the eyes of investors? Is it having a go-to market already set up? Is it that they can stand on their own two legs in terms of production, of customer base? Is there something like that that's usually a good sign for you?
I mean, it depends on the founders. It depends on the company. Depends on the stage. I think these days there's no excuse if there's no, like, you know, if you don't have like some working product yet, I would be highly critical of, you know, evaluating a company, for example. I mean, unless I know the founders already, that also happens. Like. The way I like to interact with founders is actually track them over a longer period of time or actually, you know, engage with them before they're launching their company and kind of like be maybe a sounding board for some of their ideas. But if they're, you know, approaching us like to pitch their product or, you know, pitch whatever they want to do, I think it's a combination. Like either it's the, you know, it's the team that will catch our attention and some of the people that we know, either is that we see, you know, a product that's like, I always believe as well, if products look and feel beautiful already in the early days, that will catch my eye. Like if you already care about the product you're building from day one, I think that shows, you know, generally, I think really well built products usually then later on it will help you in scaling, you know, the company and scaling revenue. So those are things that could catch our attention. Of course, if there's like some very early on, some inflection point on the revenue side, like it, you know, that could catch your attention, but that generally catches attention of a lot of people. So I think then as an investor, you have to be quite quick. So it depends on the company, depends on the stage. The way, you know, Entourage is called Entourage, and because the way we like to source deals, the way we like to evaluate founders usually happens through our network of LPs. We have more than 60 founders, software entrepreneurs in our LP base across Europe. So they help us as well to surface some of these exceptional founders or evaluate some of the opportunities we have. So I think as well, like finding an inway to one of our LPs can usually also be helpful. That's also like a filter we apply.
Well, and you've already mentioned this, and I do find it interesting, this mix that Entourage has, is that it's a venture studio and a VC fund. And the name is, I've got it here, Entourage Studio and Entourage Capital. So tell me a bit about that. You know, why go through that direction of having kind of this split of approach, and, you know, how do they complement each other?
Yeah, so I would say most people would say, yeah, it's strange. Like, you know, why, you know, there's studios, and I think there's some very successful as well, and there's VCs. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason I like to blend both is like, you know, when I started Entourage, I still wanted to build or be very close and closely involved with building, you know, one or two companies every year. And then these are then founders that like we build in our own community, in our own network, in Ghent, you know, they're in our office. And it gives us like an opportunity to really team up very closely with exceptional people in our network. And they can then benefit from some of our, the exposure they get through, you know, to the founders that invested in Entourage or that the people that we work with in our studio. And then on the other side, the fun and the way that they complement each other is we notice that like if we're meeting founders to invest in, they actually appreciate the fact that you guys are also building and you have a studio and so it, you know, Martin who used to be the CTO of Showbat, he's running the studio day to day, and so he's deep in there, you know, grinding with the founders, you know, building the MVPs, like trying to like sign those first customers. Like for us as well, like to being in the weeds with one or two companies at any given time in our office, actually, yeah, it makes sure that we're on the edge of, you know, tech, on how, you know, products are built, on how, you know, products are you know, sold and go, you know, how founders go to market. And so it helps us to stay like really fresh and connected to like how how founders build. And it actually, I noticed that a lot of like founders then who are not in our studio and who are looking for capital really appreciate the fact that you know we have a studio. So I think it helps us to win deals. It makes us more. It makes sure that we're relevant in terms of you know, technologies that are being used, areas that are interesting to explore. So for us, it's like a flywheel, and it also helps us to identify talent. So it's like, we really like it. And it helps us. One of the reasons I also started a studio is like for, you know, fund like Entourage, $40 million. I mean, we're not a big fund, but we do like to, you know, have a higher concentration or get to like certain ownership with companies, but that's generally quite difficult because like if you're, you know, trying to get into a deal that's maybe where other VCs are looking at, like it can be quite competitive. Prices go up and ownership goes down. And for us, the studio companies there, the fund gets like the first possibility to invest, and we generally can get in very early and have a reasonable ownership at a reasonable price, which is right. Exceptional, especially if you're working with good founders. And I think that also will ultimately, it should result in better returns for our fund and the investors in our fund.
Hmm. Well, you say you're a small fund, but I'm not. I mean, you know, you started in 2024, and I think you started with 25 million from what I originally saw, and now you're at 40. So, you know, you're making good progress, and you're definitely growing at a good rate. So, you know, I hesitate to call you a small fund, really, as per the growth.
Yeah, we never disclosed our second closing because in some part I don't want to be. I used to be quite like, you know, how you say it, like a public figure, and a public figure is maybe the wrong word, but like quite visible online and sure. Like when running Showpad. And I've came to the conclusion that for, you know, being a VC, sometimes it's not always like we try to be a bit more under the radar, you know, so making this exception for you maybe to be on this podcast, but like in general, like we try to be low key under the radar. Our big focus is just, you know, talking to as many founders as we can, trying to meet exceptional companies and then, you know, getting in at the right moment. And I think Entourage, yeah, I mean, $40 million is like, of course, it's a lot of money, but in early stage VC, it's still very small, right? And we're a very small team, and then we try to be like keep it that way in that form. I think, you know, probably later in the year we might start to raise our second fund, probably somewhere later this year, and then we might grow the team a little bit. But yeah, I like to keep it focused, like to get to good performance first. We're in some exciting companies, but as you know, in venture, you know, I think it takes 8 or 10 years actually to really fully see how it plays out and if you're a good VC, and that makes it tough. Like, that for me is the biggest difference between being a founder and being an investor. Like, being a founder, you can you can work crazy days, 7 days a week, you know, and you see tangible progress very quite quickly. And then, you know, you can see revenue grow, you can see product being built, you can see the team growing and talent joining. I think that's, for me, is the biggest adjustment as a VC, is like understanding that this is a long-term game. And it's, you know, I'm not interested in short-term success. We're going to post once in a while about an investment that we made. And usually it's because the founders like us to post it. And we'll do that, of course, happily. We'll celebrate the rounds. But that doesn't make a great VC firm, you know?
Sure.
And so, like, to me, that's the biggest adjustment. It's like, it's the time horizon in knowing if you're actually good and if you're actually successful, it's way longer, and so that makes it like a lot harder sometimes, because then you could start doubt yourself but it's interesting. I like it. For me, again, it's something I've never been a VC to, and I'm, you know, now that I am building a VC firm, I do like it, and I think it's I like to think that I'll be good at it, but let's see, you know, numbers will tell in a couple of years. So
We're thankful that you came on, of course, and we at EU Startups always have our eye out for these kinds of announcements. So on our end, we're always interested. But it is interesting what you're saying, this kind of like a distraction that can happen, and that it maybe is kind of ringing the celebration bell a bit early on some things. But it is of interest, I think, to most people listening here, how a VC would approach these kinds of announcements. And with that in mind, because I'm always curious about, whenever I talk to a VC, I'm always curious about how they see themselves in the wider ecosystem of venture capital, because, Europe is growing in a very large and important way. There's more and more funding. Is there more cautious capital deployment? Maybe some people say so, but at least from what we're seeing, there's more and more capital. And every founder that I talk to says, whereas 10 years ago, they had to struggle and they had to go to the US, now there's a lot more opportunity from, say, in Europe and find funding. I mean, we've seen, and this is just a quick rundown of capital funds that we've covered in this past year, 2026, we saw over 3.6 billion euros kind of circulating around. So I'm curious to hear what you think about all that. I'm curious to hear about where you see Entourage fitting in that wider ecosystem.
Yeah, so I think how Entourage would fit in the wider ecosystem, I think there's a couple of things. I think first and foremost, I do think they're not in Europe, at least there's not that much what I would call founder turned VCs or founder, you know, who start their own VC funds. I mean, there's definitely some, but I still think that already gives us like a little bit of an edge. And I always like to tell to founders, like, Entourage can be like the founder turned VC on their cap table. And I do think we're going to have some different reflexes, some, you know, I have some different experiences, some maybe different scars as an investor, as a founder, that, you know, I say probably we turn the scars from me operating Showpad or from the team that I work with, who also been operators at startups, like, we'll turn it into the advantage of our founders. And so for us, it's like, we try to like steer away from like many of the cliches or traditional reflexes, or like, we like to bring a founder perspective again, but we're a VC, We like to, challenge some of the maybe traditional thinking. So I do like to think that that's our role. We can be super flexible. We can lead. We can follow. We don't have institutional investors, so it gives us a lot of freedom in like how we operate the fund, how we invest. So sometimes we take very slow decisions, and sometimes we take very quick decisions. And so I think Entourage Displays is the founder turned VC. We're quite generalist. I mean, yes, focus on B2B software, but we're quite generalist. We don't, some VCs are very, could have certain teams or niches or certain geos that they limit themselves to. We don't care about any of those. And I think we have, if you look at our LP base, we have like a lot of great founders in our LP base. So I think that kind of mix sets us apart from most of the other VC funds. And on top of that, we're also a studio and we're still building. So I think you add that all into a mix. And I generally find that if we identify amazing founders and we like to work with them and they have different options, we're usually in a good position to actually get into the deal and they like to work with us. And so, but again, we're going to have to see how this plays out. If we maybe grow the fund, if it's going to become even more competitive, because to me as well, that was a big difference when I was an angel and I was doing smaller 50K or 100K tickets, I could basically get into any deal. And that also was a big adjustment. Like with a bigger fund, you're trying to do bigger tickets, and then suddenly you're competing with some of the big names out there or really well-known investors. Sure. And then it's harder to win those deals. And so like then you have to like really bring something differentiating to the table, or founders will generally just don't care to work with you. Navigating that, I think we're still learning. Like to me, I told as well everybody who invested in Entourage back in the, 2 years ago when we launched the fund, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be a big experiment. Like I have zero track record as a VC. I've never worked at a VC firm. I have, I generally do believe in, of course, in some way, like there's a lot to learn from some of the best people and funds out there for sure. But I also think there's a lot to like not learn or what you can do differently. And so, to me, that's a great, it feels to me like at least in the last 2 years that we've been in a good sweet spot with Entourage. And let's see how that, if we can continue to do so in the next coming year. So.
Okay. And what about, because you mentioned before too that you had experience in the States as well. I'm curious to hear just that Europe versus US distinction of how you see things have grown since when you started. And I mean both within venture capital, but also within the tech ecosystem of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. So I mean, when I launched Showpad and we actually went very quickly to the US, that was definitely, first of all, an exception. Not many founders would have moved to the US or start building their business there. At the end of the Showpad ride, more than half of our revenue came from the US. So, I mean, for us, it was a big, a big driver of the growth. And then to me as well, like the mindset that we had was like, look, if our customers, our target audience, we were selling to sales and marketing teams and the biggest sales and marketing teams were in the US, so we had to be there. And there was also limited experience of European companies going to the US. There was limited venture capital in Europe back then. And I feel in the last 10, 15 years, a lot has changed. I mean, there's way more founders who've done the journey, similar to Showpad, and who've done even, frankly, a better job or who have been more successful at it. So I think that's great for like the knowledge there. There's more investors who've supported companies going from Europe to the US. So I think that's also great. And there's way more, money being invested in young companies. And I think it's also a combination that then there's the incubators, the YC, YC has exploded. I think a lot of European founders, go through YC or do like an E-War, do a stint at E-War or go and work, go and team up with them or go to like these highly successful, like maybe more niche, like hacker houses or incubators. And I think to me that creates like more ambition, more opportunity. And I generally feel that it's that there's just more people going on that journey. On the other side, I also believe you can actually build amazing companies just focusing on Europe or European markets, or again, depending on the product and the setup. So I think it works both ways. There's more opportunity in Europe and to build in Europe and focus on the European market. And I think there's more experience on going to the US. And to be honest, like I still, sometimes I actually, when talking go to market and scaling a company, sometimes I still believe, like when I'm talking to European founders, I sometimes believe that it sometimes makes more sense to then go to the US, like once you've started being successful in Europe, because like no matter, like every country, like Germany, UK, France, Netherlands, Belgium, it's always like kind of a starting from zero and a lot of, you know, types of companies, not all, like if it's more product led growth or things like that, maybe it can scale quicker. But if you're more an enterprise or more sales led growth motions, I actually think it makes sometimes more sense to, like, once you have a first product and it's working and you're selling, go as quick as you can to the US. If that's your biggest market, I mean, why not? Like, you know, if you want to go big, then, you know, still, I think it's a very interesting market and probably the best market to go.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah, I always ask this when people jump on the podcast, because it seems to be there's this developing kind of, you know, new way of addressing entrepreneurship in Europe. And it's always the people that have had the most success have the clearest opinion on it. And it's varied, you know, I've heard some who disagree with you and say, no, stay in Europe, be fully European. Don't you dare take American capital. And I've had others say, no, you need to expand the US. It's relevant to build.
I always say, like, take any money you can get if it comes from a good investor. And probably, like, but again, it depends on the company. Sometimes it makes total sense not to go to the US and not to try and go there or compete there or build there. But it does. But then on the other side, like, if you have a product where you're the biggest market for you is the US, where you can already sign some US customers while maybe building in Europe and being based in Europe, I still believe that it's like an amazing market once you figure it out. And it all comes down to like finding and attracting the right talent, being able to like create traction there, momentum there. But like once you get it, it can be very powerful. It can also cost you a lot of money. It can also be very painful. It can it's also all those things. So it's a two-edged sword, as they say, but, I still like founders who have that ambition to conquer the world, you know?
That's good. Yeah. We're nearing the 30-minute mark here. Oh, we are at 30 minutes. So I'm going to ask you my final question here and then I'll let you get back to your day. And throughout this whole, you know, chat that we've had, what kept popping out to me was this idea that you keep bringing up, that you want to kind of shape this next generation and you want to be there at the beginning to see how they're forming and kind of be on the cutting edge, on the cutting room floor, saying what's going on, you know, what's coming out and where is it? And I know you've had, you were involved in Founder Winter Circus. So I can see that you have this kind of, and with Entourage, you've got the studio. So I want to hear a little bit about how you think that these kinds of initiatives, these kinds of communities will go forward in building the next generation of European entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I think for me, and you mentioned Winter Circus, and like for me as well, like at the end of the day, if you look at like angel investing, Winter Circus, even Entourage, I think it comes from like a starting point of like, you know, giving back, but then also trying to create like a community around that, and then also an economic model around that works, where, you know, my idea would be, you know, if I think about the next 5 or 10 years, I really hope that we're now supporting some entrepreneurs with Entourage that can actually, you know, if they become the next generation of, you know, legendary founders, as we call it at Entourage, that they're also gonna, you know, give back to the community, you know, to other founders, supporting other founders, investing, mentoring, challenging. And I think that's like, with Winter Circus, we've seen, and my co-founder Louis there did an amazing job of running the Winter Circus for the last couple of years and really shaping that into the community it is. And then add to that, like, investors, add to that ambitious people. And to me, then you have like an amazing flywheel of you know, ambition, innovation, and then hopefully like success. And eventually, I think if there's any success and returns, or people can, you know, sell their business or IPO or whatever, then again, there's capital available and can be reinvested in into the next generation. I think that's how you build like an ecosystem. And it's to me, that's it's a lot of fun to be a part of that and to play a small role in that. So, yeah. So I think that's a bit the goal. Those are like some of the goals and dreams and ambitions for the future.
I think it's a great note to end on, this idea that success in when it comes to entrepreneurship is also being able to give back and getting to a point where you can have the influence and the wisdom and the resources to give back to them. So thank you. That's a lovely way to end the episode, I think. I want to thank you, PJ, for coming on. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, you're welcome. So really enjoyed the conversation. So
thank you. No, I do as well. These are the highlights of my week. Whenever I get to get somebody on and chat with them and not just be hunched over a keyboard writing news articles. So thank you for giving me that break. And I hope we'll chat soon.
Yeah, talk soon.
Thank you.